Okay. All right, welcome everybody. So today is Friday the 27th of November, and I would like to talk about in particular this there are these 10 fetters in Buddhism that are commonly taught. There's actually one or two other lists of fetters as well, but you know, the one that's commonly taught is these 10 fetters. And it appears quite a number of times in the suttas. And I want to especially devote time to talking about this first one, which is belief in a self, or Sakkaya Ditti, belief in a self. And so without removing this fetter, just as with all the fetters, one would never attain to being a Sotapanna. And some people would kind of teach this fetter or explain this fetter just saying, like, well, you at least need an intellectual agreement or an intellectual sort of, buy-in around the Buddhist teaching of anatta, not self. Like, you at least need to agree, at least in theory, that you don't have a soul, you know, maybe like the way the Christians would describe you having a soul, or other religions would describe you having a soul. Back at the time of the Buddha, of course, Christianity had not been invented yet, but the Brahmins, now called Hinduism, their sort of version of the soul was called the Atman. Some people would say, like, okay, well, you at least have to set aside this Brahmin conception of Atman, which to them is sort of like this permanent and essential essence, you know, this everlasting, unchanging, kind of core as to what is in the center of your being, and that would persist lifetime to lifetime, very much like the Christian view of a soul. I would go farther personally and say, well, okay, this Sakkaya Ditti, well, yes, you know, it's going to take a, kind of like a reasoned acceptance of this. And I would personally also say, like, it is when we develop our meditation to the extent that we are able to get into jhanas that's when the sense of self truly drops away. Especially in the immaterial jhanas, like jhana 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, there's increasingly this dropping away of any sense of self. And just as a really interesting aside, I met a Buddhist monk in Sri Lanka. He was an Indian citizen, like he was an Indian, you know, from the country of India, and he came over to Sri Lanka to ordain as a Buddhist monk. But he had formerly been a Hindu monk. Like, he had been a Hindu monk for several years, and then wanted to reordain into Buddhism. And we had some really interesting conversations where he explained kind of the views of Hinduism better to me than I had heard them. Up to that point. And he said, jhana number 6, infinite consciousness? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, there's your Atman. That's what the Hindus are talking about when they say Atman. Whenever any Hindu monk or whatever can attain to the 6th jhana, there's sort of this sense of a universal consciousness. There's your Atman. That's what they are labeling as Atman. So that was super interesting. Not just this personalized individual self, but rather a kind of a universal self, you know? Like kind of this oversoul sort of thing, you know, kind of this universal level self. And so that's really interesting that, Hinduism does have jhanas in it, does have samadhi in it. However, I guess they just have different views around its significance and meaning. Like they'll point at the sixth jhana and say, there's the big universal self. And then Buddhism would point at it and say, well, we don't see a self there actually, but we agree on that experience being what it is, you know? We just interpret it. We don't see a self there. We see an absence of a self there. So then one would be, you know, maybe after having an experience like that, I've seen through the self now. Oh, I'm free of this fetter, this Sakkaya Ditti. You know, one might be tempted to conclude that having had a, one of these deep jhanas, like a really nice deep meditation. But then normal life happens in the interim between these formal meditations or between, you know, the nice long big meditation retreats you go on maybe once a year or something like that. You know, life happens in the interim and there's ups and downs and there's, you know, kind of dramatic things happen and twists and turns and surprises and you know what I mean. Life happens, right? And it's not that hard. In fact, it's, I would say, downright easy for us to sort of go back into our old habitual patterns, habitual ways of thinking, despite having had this really profound and deep experience in meditation. You know, maybe we had a wonderful sort of afterglow period after that deep meditation. That might have lasted even a few days, but without going back to it over and over again and repeating these deep meditations, you know, it's kind of all too soon that afterglow, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of fades away. And, you know, you're sort of back to your normal self again, right? Your normal ways of thinking, your normal assumptions, etc. Yes, you remember you had that jhana. Yes, it made an impression on you, sure. But it's the kind of thing that, you know, we would do well to keep up if we could. It's the kind of thing where it takes reinforcement over and over again. It is a gradual path, okay? It's a gradual path. And you know, for us to have any kind of sea change in our kind of emotional bedrock or our, you know, this is the kind of thing that would need to be repeated for usually, you know, it's almost always the case. It needs repeating, you know, over years, maybe even decades, right? Now I had kind of an insight around Sakkaya Ditti that I'd like to share with you. And I feel that, to really, you know, beat this fetter down once and for all, we even have to go farther than, attaining jhanas. This is my own view. And, what I think is that, how can I put this? Like, maybe I'll just give an example to show you what I mean. Like, seeing that, like, there being a belief in a self can be applied both onto ourselves, believing we have a self, and it can also be applied onto other people, thinking they have a self, okay? This Sakkaya Ditti isn't just in reference to ourselves. Sakkaya Ditti is... It applies in all places and times, and it applies to everyone. Meaning, like, if we are to overcome this view of self, we must overcome seeing that there's a self in others as well, not just ourselves. Okay, that one's actually really hard. That one's really hard. And let me give you this example as to why it's hard. So, all right, so let's say somebody has, you know, done something that we really didn't like and we feel wronged, you know, somebody behaved in a way that we weren't expecting or wanting or whatever. They spoke in a way we, you know, found offensive or rude or something. And we, you know, we feel very affronted, maybe very upset and very emotionally hurt or something like this. And, now, okay, yes, that person's behavior was, you know, reprehensible and unskillful. That's just a given here. But then we can go on to make the mistake, and I would call this like a Sakkaya Ditti mistake, where we're like, that person is my oppressor. That person is an oppressor. And we imbue a sense of like identity onto them. Like, that's the oppressor. He's the oppressor. You know, I bestow that person with the identity of an oppressor. Okay? Maybe we don't quite phrase it in those words, but there's sort of an identity which we hang around their neck, which is labeled as, you know, oppressor, you know? And once we do that, I believe we've fallen into Sakaya Ditti, because that is to say, like, there's a self there, and its essence is that of oppression, you know? Yeah, and when we do that, even though we might not be aware of it, we also imbue a sense of identity onto ourselves as well. I am the victim. That's the oppressor there. This is the victim here. Okay, so now we've, you know, these labels have been hung around both of our necks, and there is a sense of self that goes with that. And there's a lot of emotional turmoil that comes along with that. Oh, that person's so bad. Oh, they wronged me. And we just keep revisiting this over and over again. And okay, yeah, sure, they did something wrong. It is true. But since we got our emotions worked up around it, we keep stewing in it, you see, and that is a mistake on our part, to continually stew in this and to have told ourselves a story about, oh, that's the oppressor and I'm the victim. There's a story now, you know, we now have a plot, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that to me is a fetter. That's my insight I want to share with you, is that is a fettering thing when we are very sluggish or even incapable of bouncing back from when life gives us a lemon of some sort, you know what I mean? How can I put it? I feel that in order to overcome this fetter of Sakaya Ditti, sure, we can acknowledge unskillfulness where we see it. But can we depersonalize it? Can we depersonalize it? You see, can we put the teaching of anatta onto the table and not have it slip off the table with respect to how it was that we were wronged by somebody else? Okay? So yes, that person was unskillful, but let's depersonalize that. You know, well, you know, that there are obviously kaleshas, you know, defilements, found in that person, you know, but Buddhism has this great stock phrase for talking about this in a depersonalized way, okay? This stock phrase appears over and over again. Let me see if I can dig it out for you here. Okay, so I'm just going to... I found the stock phrase really easily in the Majjhima Nikaya. So this is from Majjhima Nikaya 22. Okay, Alagadupama Sutta, okay, verse 27. It's talking about the five aggregates and how we would see each one of those aggregates with not self, like with anatta, okay? Therefore, bhikkhus, any kind of material form, whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all material form should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom, thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. And likewise, any kind of feeling, whatever, okay? So it's cycling now through the five aggregates. Any kind of perception, whatever. Any kind of formations, whatever. Any kind of consciousness, whatever. Whether past, future, or present. Internal or external. Gross or subtle. Inferior or superior, near or far, all consciousness should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Okay, so notice in this, and you know, although I did not repeat five times over this stock list, it, you know, back at the time of the Buddha when these suttas were verbally recited as a means of memorizing them, they wouldn't have shortened it the way I did just now. They would have repeated it through five times, you know, like whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. Okay, so that would be repeated out the five times because they're like really trying to, you know, kind of like hammer this into you, you know, drill this in, you know, memorize, right? That was their way of memorizing, is through this repetition. It's actually kind of a learning method, you know, to repeat like this, say, like kind of these stock phrases, you just keep repeating them and they, you know. Okay, so what I'd like to especially hone in on here is this internal or external, okay? So back to my Sakaya Ditti. Can we see that when others have got kilesas, you know, defilements, and so do we, just maybe different ones, you know? If we're not arhants, we've all got some kilesas to work on, all right? Plenty of kilesas out there, you know? And some of them are internal, and some of them are external, okay? So that's my point here. That's my insight. It's like, I believe that to overcome this Sakaya Ditti fetter, we need to be able to apply it internally and externally, okay? Meaning like, you know, it's found in others or inside ourselves, okay? Externally and internally. And right, so, you know, the next time somebody wrongs us, and by the way, this doesn't launder their bad behavior, okay? This doesn't justify their bad behavior. But nonetheless, can we try to, you might say, do a little damage control, okay? Damage control in the sense of like, ah, that's an external kilesha, you know what I mean? And now we've applied this anatta thing, you know what I mean? Rather than being like, that person is the oppressor, I'm the victim. Okay, and like, there is a tremendous, I would say, gain for ourselves in doing it this way, because now we don't get drawn into this internal drama of like, you know, now we aren't going to go around trying to convince others and insinuate to others, oh, this person's an oppressor, this person's an oppressor, don't you agree? I'm the victim, don't you agree? I'm the victim. We don't have to go around repeating this. Even though we might think it will somehow help, it tends to not help much at all. It just makes things usually worse. It can be constructive, but it's not easy, okay? But like the more that we are able to, shall we say, depersonalize it, okay? The more we can depersonalize it, I would say, then we do right by this teaching of coming out of the fetter of Sakaya Ditti. So this depersonalizing is to be done all across the board. That's my point. Okay, now, and I a few Dhamma talks ago, there was this awesome part of the Parayana, one of my favorites. Ajahn Punadamo also quoted this as well when he gave his 3-day retreat here at the CTBC a while back. This is the advice to Mogha Raja. And I'm just going to say I'll say this advice to Mogha Raja, because I think this ties in with it. Okay, like overcoming this sense of self and overcoming Sakaya Ditti. Okay, so the Buddha's talking to this wanderer Mogha Raja and says, the Pali is Sada Sato Anatta Nuditing Uhacha Ewang Machutaro Siya Ewang Lokang Awekantang Machuraja Napasatiti. Okay, and the John Tenisser gives a translation. Always mindful, Mogha Raja, regard the world as empty, having removed any view in terms of self. This way, one is above and beyond death. One who regards the world in this way isn't seen by death's king. Okay, who is like Mara, okay? Now that's John Tenisero's translation, and my Pali teacher buddy in Sri Lanka points out that that word atta nuditing uhacha, or uhacha, that could be translated as murdering the view of self, which is a much stronger phrasing than having removed any view in terms of self. My buddy's like, no, it's like murdering. It's like, don't hold back on this teaching of anatta, you know, is I think the takeaway here. Yeah. And I would further say, like, our work in this place, in this aspect of the Buddhist teachings, isn't done until we're able to see this both internally and externally. Like, yes, we should try to depersonalize our own, you know, view of the world and come out of this view of self, but also apply to others as well. You know, they still have a duty and a responsibility for their own behavior and their sila and all that stuff. But I would argue that we actually fetter ourselves emotionally. I would say, oh, this is highly fettering in an emotional sense. When we imbue a sense of self onto the other person, oh, that person's an oppressor, or that person is like this, like that, and we, you know, we're very much to like portray them as this villainous character. When actually, no, they just have some kilesas, they just have defilements, they just have shortcomings in their personality here or there or whatever, which we're conditioned, you know. But you know, that doesn't have to add up to a villain. It doesn't have to add up to a story. It just, you know, if we depersonalize it, it takes a lot of the drama out of it. That's my point. If we can come out of that self-view, it deflates the drama out of the situation a lot. And that is to come out of a fetter, from my point of view. There is this one monk in my past who, I won't name, but, I had the hardest time for the longest time not seeing this person as like a villain. Oh, this person is my oppressor, you know, the longest time. But, this insight has helped me tremendously because, you know, when I talk to other people about this, they'd be like, you know, you don't live with that person anymore. So, just get over it, you know, just forget about it, you know, just move on, you know. But I had this kind of like inability to let go of it because I'm just like, yeah, but that stuff happened. I'm not going to pretend it didn't happen. That really, you know, that's something that how could I ever forget it? It's like, it's stamped into my memory. Like it's, you know, it's made a deep impression that I just cannot forget. I cannot just wave my hand and make it go away. Sorry. However, this, to bring not self to the situation, for me, is the resolution I was looking for, okay? And this is why I'm very kind of, what's the word? You know, feeling inspired to share this with you as well, okay? Yeah, because this is without the Buddha, I don't think I would have ever moved on from this or been able to let go of this. Like I actually realized, wait a sec, I'm really, really imbuing a sense of self onto the other person. I really have this person characterized as a villain in my mind. And I'm the one making this identity up. Actually, this person is a mixture of skillfulnesses and, you know, unskillfulnesses as well. And, it would behoove me to, you know, give credit where it is due. You know, for whatever positive things they are good at doing, they are capable of. I should give credit for that. They're not a one-sided villain at all. They're actually a very sort of multifaceted person with actually a number of praiseworthy talents. And then these shortcomings they have, these, you know, I would go so far as to say kilesas. Can I depersonalize those? That's the question. And just see them as, those are external kilesas. But, you know, this doesn't have to add up to some kind of a identity. Okay? And that's, in my opinion, how to let go of this. That takes all the drama out of the situation. And now I'm not emotionally fettered anymore to having this sense of identity. I'm the victim. That's the oppressor. Okay? So this is huge, in my opinion. You know, it. Neither do we just sweep this under the rug, nor do we keep stewing in negative emotions. Okay, there is a happy medium in the middle here, which I am painstakingly trying to explain here. Yeah, and to me that is the middle path, really, that I was looking for. You know. And gives me an ability to move on from this, Like, well, I should work on whatever internal kaleshas are here. And if that person knew it was good for them, they would work on their kaleshas as well. You know, those are some external kaleshas. But, I don't have to imbue any sense of identity onto that. Or any sense of self, or go around, let alone going around and trying to convince others that it's true as well, insinuating that this other person's a villain, insinuating that they're an oppressor, trying to scrape my little story onto other people. You know, that's, you know, that makes things even worse. Okay, so yeah. Okay, now. All right, so it's 9:35. Yeah, so this is... okay, maybe I'll just stop the talk here. So I just did an MP3 of this. I'll put it on my website.